Elektroauto News. Der Podcast rund um das Thema Elektromobilität. Mit aktuellen Entwicklungen, Diskussionen, Interviews und vielem mehr.
Servus und herzlich willkommen bei einer neuen Folge des Elektroauto News.net Podcast. Ich bin Sebastian, freue mich, dass du heute wieder mit am Start bist. Heute Sonderfolge im doppelten Format. Nicht nur wieder am Mittwoch, sondern auch dieses Mal erstmalig auf Englisch. Und um es vorab mit den Worten von Lothar Matthäus zu sagen: My English is not very good, my German is better. Ich hoffe, das merkt man auch, wenn ich mich nicht gerade verhaspel. Aber es geht heute auch mehr um unseren Gast. Und der Gast ist Carlos Gosen, ehemaliger Chairman und CEO der Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi-Allianz. Und wir haben uns unterhalten über E-Mobilität. Wie soll das auch anders sein? In Europa, in China, auf der ganzen Welt und die Kombination der verschiedenen Märkte. Wir gehen direkt rein in die Folge. Viel Spaß damit.
Mr. Gosen, you recently launched your newsletter and have been sharing your perspectives more actively on LinkedIn in the last few weeks. What motivated you to engage more directly in the public debate around the future of mobility, especially e-mobility?
You know, when I arrived in Lebanon, I was asked by many people if I could make younger people or younger entrepreneur to benefit from my long experience in the industry. And I said, well, I would be very happy to do it. So I started, as you know, a seminar in one of the university that was very successful. And they asked me to do more. I said no, because I don't want to make it a business or something like this. It was all pro bono. And to prove it, I said, well, if there are subjects of interest that I can share with the larger public, I'm willing to do it. Because I think that for people like me with a very long experience in the industry, sharing with whoever is interested some lessons, not only about mobility, but about crisis management, about personal life when you are a very busy executive, how to maintain balance, these kind of subjects, was part of our duty to give back to society what you have been given. And so I do it in a way which is at the same time a pleasure for me, because I think sharing your experience, reflecting on the past, in a certain way helping people to make their own decision by confronting what they're being going through with somebody else that they respect, because if they don't respect you, they're not going to follow you on LinkedIn, on these platforms. I think it's a good thing to do, and it's something that I find interesting for me and part of my perception and my belief that you have to give back.
And I think it's also more interesting for you that you have the direct channel to interact with the clients, customers, persons which are interested in your thoughts about it. I think so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in fact, that these new technology allow a person to speak direct to the public instead of going through the channel of the newspapers, where into the newspaper people give their own opinion, they mix it with yours. So the message at the end of the day, it's not your message, it's your message with the message of the journalist. They are mixed. So while you are talking directly, when you are on LinkedIn or you are on Instagram or you are on YouTube, the message is pure. It's absolutely not truncated by any interpretation in the middle.
It's just like here in our podcast, it's also pure. You're directly speaking then to our listeners here, and also could give your opinion there. I think it's also very good.
Exactly.
But from the mobility side, I think all the other aspects you mentioned are also very important and insightful. But I'm coming from the mobility perspective, especially from the e-mobility perspective. You have your history there, especially, and you have a good broad view over the market, I think so, in Europe, in China, and compared these two markets with another. What we see at the moment, China is rising the last few years. Europe is standing still from the perspective of the market, or if you look at the market. Do you see this also from your side?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, frankly, I'm seeing it from my side, but particularly for me, it's not a surprise. What is a surprise is the lack of responsiveness, the lack of reactivity of the competitors of China in front of what China is doing. That means, for me, it was clear since the year practically 2000, when the Chinese decided to make of the auto industry one of the pillar of their economic development, that they're going to concentrate everything, all their forces, to support the development of a car industry in China. They did it through, joining forces between the government, the national government, the local government, the private entrepreneurs, the investments in terms of infrastructure, the financial support. It was clear that this would be one of the area where they're going to try to make a breakthrough, and they've done it, and they've done it. And they've been extremely pragmatic in doing that by starting with a forced joint venture with a foreign car manufacturer, because like anybody else, when I went to China in 2002 to position Nissan, we had to make a 50-50 joint venture with Dongfeng Motors, okay? And all the car manufacturers were at the same. So they could learn how to do it. They could observe the management. They could observe and participate into the technology in a period where they were catching up. They were trying to learn from the Japanese, the Korean, the European, the Americans, how to make a car, how to make a good car, what's attractive, what's not attractive, etc. This period of learning and adapting and catching up is finished. Okay? Now we are in a phase where, as you know, Chinese are long-term thinker and long-term actors. They're not afraid of having a 20-year plan or a 30-year plan. Now it's a phase of the offensive where they say, not only we can be competitive where the other people are, but we're going to create our own area of advances, our own area of singularity. And, between all these areas, you have the electric cars that they have selected by saying, well, in fact, we're gonna be the main force in electric car. And it made a lot of sense because, as you know, electric car was not the product of a market demand. Electric car somehow was imposed on the market. It was imposed on the market for two considerations. The first consideration was the emission control, climate change, etc., although the regulation on that. And the second one, particularly for the country who does not have oil, is to reduce their dependency on oil. Okay, and China has both. They are dependent on oil import, and then they had the problem of pollution, particularly visible in large cities, that anybody could experiment. So based on these two motivations, plus the fact that they wanted employments and they wanted to occupy in the sector of mobility with their own forces, they went and they were extremely persistent. And today, they are a force you have to reckon with, okay? So, the Chinese were, it was predictable. You know, it's not a surprise. What was a surprise is the fact that they were not taking, in my opinion, as seriously as they should have taken by the European or the Japanese or the Korean or even the American competitors. When they start to put all their forces in electric car, support consistently electric car in their own market, trying to integrate the technology by having their own battery makers, by having all their own motor maker, by making all the investment necessary for rare earth elements that would go to support it, I think that there was some kind of passivity in front of that. And this passivity now is receiving a wake-up call because they are on the offensive everywhere. And you could see it, you know. I was talking to somebody today who told me that in Mexico, 25% of the market is between the Chinese car manufacturer. This percentage 10 years ago was zero. So they went from zero to 25% in a very short period of time. In the Middle East, which was the domain of predilection of the Japanese and the Korean, the Chinese are making very, very big inroads on detriment of these car makers. So, my opinion is China is on a roll. They are on a roll for reasons that are due to them. They are serious. They are persistent. They are hardworking. They are competitive. They are pragmatic. But from the other side, the lack of reaction and the passivity of the European and other car makers, for me, is difficult. Has been difficult to understand.
From this point of view, if you say it, I think the European or the American OEMs were sleepy. They didn't thought about the Chinese power which is coming there, the offensive.
Yeah, I wouldn't say sleepy. I would say passive. Not sleepy. They were seeing, because most of them were in China. Okay? They were seeing what was going on in China. They have felt the ambition of the Chinese. But they were passive. They did not, in my opinion, react as strongly or prepare themselves as strongly or as rapidly or as intensively as they should. Let me give you an example. I can talk about an experience I've been through, Nissan, okay? Or Renault, okay? So, Nissan was a pioneer of electric car. We started with the Leaf. For a certain period of time, the Leaf was the most sold electric car in the world, okay? Up to the year 2016, 2017. But instead of benefiting from this initial, advantage, you know, they start to say, well, maybe we should make a little bit more effort on hybrids. Maybe we should renew a little bit more the internal, and at the same time doing the electric car. It doesn't work. The Chinese put a lot of efforts on electric car, and obviously what was supposed to happen happened. That means if you have somebody concentrated on one technology and willing to really establish a dominance in this technology, and the other guy who considers this technology as one of the options that they are offering, it's a question of time before the first guy is going to prevail. And that's what happened. That's what happened. You know, what struck me is, you know, BYD was a battery manufacturer. They were not a car manufacturer originally. They went to the cars by the second half of the year 2000, of the decade of the year 2000. But now they are the leader of manufacturing and selling electric cars in the world, which is extremely interesting. And they don't do only electric cars, they do the other cars too, okay? So they concentrated their efforts on electric car, but they didn't want to stay only on this field. They started also to go and compete in the other elements. So I don't say that people were sleepy. They were passive. There was not enough reaction. There were not enough strategies to prepare for what was going to obviously.
Yeah, but if you look at this now and we say it's not sleepy, it was more passively, I think some patterns repeat there. You said it perfectly with the Nissan Leaf. They then looked more into direction hybrid or fuel. And now what we see here in Europe, especially from the politician side, the OEMs targeted BEVs, EV vehicles, to go there. And now, end of the last year, start of this year, the EU regulation was changed again, and it was reopened it again into directly plug-in hybrids, BEVs with range extender, or even fuel cars. It seems like a pattern repeats there. We don't go through with one path, which we already had seen here. How should we win this time?
No, I totally agree with you. That means the stop and go and the inconsistency of the policies in Europe. And I can tell you, in the United States, the same thing. There have been stop and go. You have a new president coming. He put an incentive. The other one eliminated the incentive. Some people invest in infrastructure, then they stop the infrastructure because they don't have money to do it, or they direct it somewhere else. These inconsistency have helped a lot the Chinese, because, you know, in China, one of the key of their success, or the success of electric car, is the development of a very, very solid infrastructure. Okay, not only they have great batteries today, and they master the technology, but at the same time you have a lot of charging stations, and the grid is totally capable of handling all these electric cars. So the attack from the Chinese was very consistent. It was not okay. The manufacturing company, which are usually provincial company, you know, one is in Shanghai, the other is in Beijing, the third one, the provincial supported by the provinces were going on the offensive, but the national government of China said, "You can go ahead, guys, and I'm going to support you. I'm going to develop the infrastructure. I'm going to put together the financing package in order to support you." And this has been consistent for the last 25 years. There was not stop and go. They didn't stop here and then started it there. Well, when you look at Europe, for example, obviously I've been seeing it through Renault. Well, unfortunately, there were a lot of European politicians or even French politicians which first were a bit skeptical about electric cars, because we heard a lot of things that electric car pollute because you have to take in consideration the well to wheel and et cetera. And then, you know, some were favorable, they supported it. When the government changed, somebody else came and they stopped it and then divided by two, then multiplied. And this is terrible for the industry. This is terrible for the industry.
Yeah, I understand this. Nobody in the industry can plan with their money, which they invest there, and go this path through. So do you see the problem also more from the politician side, that they don't set one frame and let the OEMs work into in this frame? Or does the industry doesn't need that kind of frame, and there are other internal blockers on the OEM industry side which are holding them back for going all in e-mobility, for example?
No, I think there was a role to be played by the governments in the case of the electric cars, because let's not forget that one of the two reasons for which electric car made an inroad in our industry were two reasons which were much more at the level of the state, not at the level of the market. It was emission controls and climate change, and it was dependency on oil. These are not the control. These are not the concerns of companies in general. This is not the first concern of company. So it has to be regulated. So the state has to say, "Well, we want you to contribute to the emission control or the pollution control, and your contribution should be X." Except that when the discussion took place on what should be the contribution of the car industry, unfortunately, we didn't have too much realistic positions from the politicians. That they thought that the industry was capable of doing much more than they could realistically do in a frame where companies have to produce results and they have to produce profits. So, and then all of a sudden, when they discovered that they've been too tough on the industry and the house was scrambling, they change it, which is even, it puts a little bit more of a mess in the industry, because those who invested heavily in the electric car finding themselves taken back by the new position, while those who were late, in fact, are benefiting it, even though they didn't do any investment into this field. It's a real mess. That's why the Chinese have this advantage. Well, obviously, which is difficult into a democratic country, I understand, but they have this advantage of a total consistency of the policies in this matter. There is no stop and go. When they decide on a goal, they're going to go for it, and it's going to last 5, 10, 15 years, and nobody's going to change it, because you know how it works. So this is one of the good side of a regime which is not very democratic.
But if we see it this way, we could say, okay, there's one path from China for all this industry there, where they know to go. In Europe, this is not the case. But the OEM, the European OEM, could decide from itself, okay, this is my way, I will go this way, even if the state is pushing me forward or year. So yeah. I think every OEM should be in the opportunity. It's not the easiest way for sure, but they could also decide, okay, we go all in, we go this path, even if Europe is saying stop and go for a second or third time then.
I agree. But as you said, it requires a lot of courage. It requires a lot of self-assurance, because let's not forget that you have shareholders, you have state interference, you have analysts, and if all these guys are on your back, on top of the technical issues, the market issues, it becomes unbearable. So I'm not saying it was easy. I've had my own share of the suffering with the French government and the European community. As you know, I followed very carefully this because I've been the head of the ASEA for many years. It was in a certain way very frustrating to see how much all the bureaucrats, all the politicians were a little bit immune to our just dialogue, to say, guys, don't make it too hard on us because we have a competition. It's coming from everywhere. Let's do something realistic. But then you have a French politician considered that being realistic mean eating in the hands of the car makers, and they didn't want to do that. So this battle between the car makers from one side and the European community from the other side of some states has been, in my opinion, damaging, and we are seeing the damage now.
And how do you see the opportunity for the states and also for the OEMs for sure to get out of this damaged state into a state of offensive or not more on the passive side? Is there a chance for us?
Well, look, first there is a good step which has been done by European community, that they recognize that they've been too demanding and are coming back to more realistic position. This is good. It would have been better that they adopt this attitude from the beginning. But now it's better late than ever, and the damage has been done. What we want is to make sure that the damage is not going to increase. Now, car makers have to have a clear strategy now. You know, do you wanna really establish yourself mainly as a electric car maker, or do you want to be a generalist with internal combustion engine, electric cars, a little bit of hydrogen? This is each one strategy. Okay, but there is a factor which is extremely important, is electric cars cannot develop massively if there is no investments in infrastructure. The charging system needs to be adequate for a mass presence of electric cars in the market. You know very well that today, for example, when you drive an internal combustion, a car with internal combustion engine, you don't care about how much gasoline you have in your car, because you know that if you missed it, you're going to stop anywhere and you're going to be able to refuel. Okay? Well, electric cars don't have this because there are a lot of areas in Europe where the charging system is very rare or very inconsistent. So this worry about the sustainability and how much it's reliable is still a brick. This is the same thing in the United States, by the way. While when you look at the infrastructure that the Chinese have developed, it's absolutely very solid, very reliable.
Yeah, but by this point, you must say, especially in Europe, and I would say in mid-European France, in Germany, Swiss, Austria, and so on, there's a very good infrastructure. But I know what you mean. If you go to Poland or something like that, there's a little bit more rare. But I think it's more of a secure feeling for the drivers. They know they are fueled cars. They know, okay, just like you said, we could go there. I think they must learn that this is another kind of mobility which they will use. And if they learn it, which takes some time, they would also be going to e-mobility then?
I think, yes, you have to work on eliminating this fear. This is coming from the fact that, as you know, that the battery gives you much more mileage. The new technology on batteries, I mean, the batteries become cheaper, smaller. They're going to give you much more mileage. We are seeing now car at 700, 800 kilometers, 900 kilometers. This is a contribute to the peace of mind. But nothing is better than having charging station everywhere, because you say, okay, no matter what happens, if my son or my wife, who is not paying attention to this, gets stuck somewhere, there is a station nearby, and I'm not worried about it. But you see, but there is another problem also, which in certain way is a handicap for the European industry. In the United States, the intervention of the state in a private company is very limited. Okay? It's very limited. They intervene when there is a disaster. For example, in 2008, President Obama with Steve Rattner, they intervene with General Motors, they intervene with Chrysler to save employment. Okay? But they got out immediately after. Okay? When they got their money back, when they done the job, they got their money back, okay, they went out. In Europe, and in some countries in Europe, I'm talking about France particularly, the state want to intervene in companies without a very specific objectives. Okay? So, and this is very dangerous, because in a certain way, they are giving messages. They are trying to influence decisions of management, and in a way where management is afraid because they represent the power, but they absolutely have no accountability about the consequence of the decision that management is taking because of their influence. And this is particularly striking in a country like France. Like maybe in Germany, it's less visible because somehow the political system in Germany have been very supportive of their industry. You know, I remember when I used to work with Dieter Zetsche, you know, that we had a collaboration between Nissan, Renault, and Daimler. I was always envious and admirative of the fact that when Dieter has a problem, he called the chancellor directly, you know, and he said, "I have a problem. What you guys are doing here?" And she always say, "Okay, let's try to find the solution." You know, I could never do this with the president of France. Never. Okay, they're going to say you have to go through one intermediary and second intermediary. You have to be extremely careful. You know, so while you see, for example, in China, the people who are spearheading the industrial assault, they are listened to. And being supported, obviously, as long as they deliver results, which is fine. So, Europe is not in the best position, because not only it has to deal with bureaucracy, it has to deal with the politician, but some countries in Europe, it has to deal with a historic background where you have some kind of monarchy. You know, the king, who is the president, knows everything and he can direct you, even though they don't understand anything. And he can put you in a situation where you're going to lose the battle because of misunderstanding or lack of communication. And unfortunately, that's what's happening in France, you know. Renault's down. Peugeot is in trouble. Most of the industry has been in the decline. Not because there is no good entrepreneur or there is not a lot of talent, but because of this vicious interference of the state where it shouldn't happen.
So do you think from your side it would be best if the state in France, but also in Europe, in Germany, for example, is going more out and give more might and power back to the OEMs and say, do your way and we will even the path for you?
Without any doubt. They should put the limits. Okay, that's what we want. In terms of emission, okay, let's discuss it. Let's establish a milestone for this, but let's do it in a realistic way. where you guys feel comfortable with this kind of realization, and then ask them what they want. You know, we want you to do a, we want you to help us reduce the consumption of oil because we are too dependent, etc. Give the macro goals, and then let them manage this and judge them on results. Not interfering on, not only you need to reach this objective, but this is the way we want you to reach it. Every time somebody has a problem, there is a suspicion that he's not playing the game. So there should be more trust. Okay, but again, I'm generalizing to Europe because I know that some countries are much better than others. You know that. And it happens that I worked in a country where the relationship between companies and the states in Europe were, in my opinion, one of the worst, which is France.
But if you look more directly, I know you won't talk about special OEMs, I understand this. But if you look at the German failure, for example, overall OEMs there, we're, from my opinion, from my side of view here on the market, we're in a state of the market where we are not able anymore to invest in fuel cars, e-mobility, plug-in hybrids, EVs with range extender. We have to go one or maximum two pairs.
Exactly. No, I totally agree with you. I mean, each company has to decide what it wants in function of a strategy. Now, it can be a successful one. It can be a failure. But the guaranteed failure is to try. If you're running after 10 rabbits, you're not going to catch any one of them. Okay? So maybe you're running after the wrong rabbit. Maybe. But here, this is a maybe. But what is sure, if you want to pursue all the avenue, you're going to lose the battle.
Yeah, but this is one of the topics which is here, especially end of 2025, was discussed all over with the German word Technologieoffenheit, openness for technology, which seems like we're holding all paths open to all 10 rabbits here, and you could go where you want. I think it's the wrong sign there. Just like you said, you have to go one or a maximum two directions, choose one rabbit and follow.
Exactly. But you know, it's very, very hard to do. I'm going to give you my own experience. When I started the electric cars in Nissan, I had a huge resistance inside the company. Why? Because, you know, the engineers inside the company, they look around, they see Toyota doing hybrid, they see Honda doing hybrid. I say, what the hell are we going to do with electric car? Nobody's doing electric car. And by the way, if we do electric car, we're going to have less to invest into hybrid, and they're going to be eating the market from us. Okay? So it was a very, very tough task to say, no, guys, we need to establish a superiority somewhere. We need to have an advance somewhere. And our domain is electric car. But do not underestimate even the internal resistance that you have when you go for something innovative, okay? And unfortunately, as you know, when I was not anymore a CEO of Nissan in 2016, because I became chairman and gave the leadership to Saikawa, because I had to take care of Mitsubishi, which joined the alliance, the efforts on electric cars start to soften. Why? Because a lot of people said, well, you know what, maybe we should do the hybrid here, we should do the diesel here, we should do that. We start to run after a lot of rabbits, and at the end of the day, you don't catch anyone.
I understand this. I had the chance to talk with Michael Joost, VW strategic management in 2020, and he told me also they know from VW side, if they go this path to e-mobility, they would lose for some time money and make it afterwards. This is for sure. But it's also, just like you said, the path we need to go if we want to be the leader in the future then. And if we go out there, because I know you won't talk about VW in a special, we see on the European OEMs.
Yeah.
And look there. Is there a chance from your side, from your point of view, that they will regain the competitiveness in the market by 2030, or will they lose most of the market to the Chinese OEMs?
No, I think they can regain, but they have to sharpen their strategy. They have to sharpen their strategy. And they have to assume the strategy. It's not because, you know, any innovative strategy on the short term is going to face headwinds. If at the first headwind, you bend the knee and you bow to your resistance, you're lost. Okay? If every time you face challenges, you retreat, you're lost. Let me give you one example. And the only company I can talk about are the company that I used to manage. Okay? When I introduced Renault to China, it was tough. Okay? Because already competition in China was hard. When I left Renault, the first thing that Renault did is withdraw from China. Okay? So, what's the consequence of this? When you withdraw from a tough battleground, the only thing you're sure is your competitor is going to come to your battleground. Because they've seen that you are afraid to compete on their battleground. They're going to say, well, we know these guys don't have the stamina, and they don't have the strategy, and they don't have the grit to fight. We're going to go on their, and that's what's happened. You know, today that Renault has a relationship with Geely, which becoming more and more influential on Renault. I can bet you if things continue like this, one day the whole company will be absorbed by Geely. Okay? That's what's going to happen. And you know, Chinese, it took Chinese 75 years to take the control of Hong Kong, you know? So they are used to very long-term objective where they, okay? So I think what happens to the weak car manufacturers is they're going to become the bed for a Chinese car manufacturer to come, start a cooperation, and little by little take position inside the car manufacturer, which is a good strategy for the Chinese, obviously, because it means they become European in Europe, but with another packaging.
There's CD, so we saw it already with MG, which was bought off by SAIC, and is a British brand, but we all know it's a Chinese OEM behind it, where they already did this mastership there.
Yeah, Volvo, same thing, you know? You have a lot of brands like this. And you know, the consumer is buying MG today or buying Volvo, doesn't know if it's Chinese or it's... And this is where the strategy of the Chinese is very smart. By saying, you know what? We're going to be European in Europe. Okay? We're going to go inside. We're going to adapt to Europe. And we're going to bring our savoir-faire, our know-how, our new technology inside Europe.
Yeah, and they just play on time, just like you said. It doesn't count for them if they are talking about 5, 10, 15, or 20 years. They know their past, they're following through then. But to get back there, we're seeing Chinese brands here coming to Europe. They're also not, it's not the easiest battleground for them like they thought it would be, to be open. They have also their problems here. But if you're looking at the market right now and the direction where it's heading in 2030, 2035, how will the market look like from your point of view? How do you think we will see more Chinese brands here? Do we see the older Europe brands here still in the market? How will the market change in the next few years?
Well, compared to the situation today, the thing I can assure you is that the presence of the Chinese car manufacturer in Europe is going to increase. And it's going to increase significantly. Okay, it's not a question of how many brands will come, because I suspect they're going to be at a certain point in time consolidation between the Chinese themselves. Okay, limited by the fact that each car manufacturer in China is coming from a province, and the provinces are a little bit competing against each other. This is going to limit a little bit the integration. But it's absolutely no question on the fact that no matter what is the position of the Chinese today in Europe, if you look 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road, they're going to have a much bigger position than today, directly or indirectly. For example, let's suppose the position of Geely in Europe. They are minuscule today. They are not very big, okay? But let's suppose Geely take control after a while of Renault, okay? You're selling Renault cars, but it's a Chinese company. You know what I mean? So it's like MG. It's MG today. It's a Chinese company. You know, the market share belongs to the Chinese. Volvo is a Chinese company. And frankly, I have nothing against that. I think it's just the law of the market. But what I'm saying is We should be lucid about it. We should not hide ourselves from it. And if we don't like that, we should make sure we have a strategy in front of that. And the strategy, which is not a temporary one, which is for 1-2 years and then we'll see, something on the long term. How do we preserve the local industries, the local ownership on the long term?
Could such a strategy be one new European OEM alliance? You know it best, I think so, with Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi, which went together to gain market shares then to their time. Do you think something like this would help Europe to get more market share back or stand their ground here in Europe?
Yeah. Look, on the paper, yes. In reality, it's very tough. You know, I've been holding the lines for 19 years successfully. And then Mitsubishi joined. And you know that at a certain point in time, Fiat Chrysler was going to join also. So this was a very successful story. And then when government started to interfere, they blew the whole thing up. And obviously, there's no accountability on it. So when you do alliances, it works very well when the alliances are within the same national or political area. But when it starts to go into different regions with different governments, it's very dangerous because at a certain point in time, the itch for control is more powerful, unfortunately, than the seek of performance. Okay? So, you know, we have always this battle between control and performance. From time to time, you have to give up control to allow a better performance. Okay? And from time to time, you say, no, the hell with performance. We can always fix it. Let's take back control of the company. That's what they've done, where the Japanese took back control of Nissan and the French government took back control of Renault, except that the two companies declined. Okay? Which means we preferred control on performance. Okay? And this is the big poison against alliances. Because when people who are much more inclined to give a priority to control over performance, now you are in a very dangerous ground.
I understand this, especially if the point is there are different states also involved there, like you just said, with Japanese and French. But if you look at Germany, there are many brands here in Germany which could go together or could that.
No doubt. If you are inside Germany, I absolutely know. Even if you are inside Europe, I still think it's much, much better. And I am a firm believer in alliances, alliances more than mergers, because alliances keep the pride of identity and the pride of the brand intact. Okay, people, nobody feels he's becoming a second tier citizen to somebody else. Nobody feels that he's working for somebody else who is not part of their country, who is not part of their city, who is not part of their industry. So that's why the alliances are much more powerful, because on the long term, it preserves the motivation of people and the identity of people inside the company, which obviously on the short term can create a lot of conflict, but on the long term, make it a real cement of this can continue. Because as long as it delivers performance to each company, there is no reason to do something different.
Thank you for these insights. And just for the end of our interview, or for speaking here together, which was very interesting for me till right now, I wanted to ask, what would be, I know there's no one solution or way to go, but if you would go back into the CEO seat of any European company, what would be your number one priority right now to don't lose that much market share till 2035 or even get more market share against the Chinese competition, for example?
Well, I can tell you, sharpen your strategy, sharpen, don't go after many rabbits. Select your rabbits, go after them, sharpen, focus.
Perfect final word. Thank you for your time, Carlos.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Ich hoffe, dass du heute trotz der anderen Sprache, die du eben noch nicht gewohnt bist hier von unserem Podcast, einiges aus dem Gespräch mit Carlos Gosen mitnehmen konntest. Ich konnte es auf jeden Fall. Wir haben für euch auch nochmal bei uns im Portal das Ganze niedergeschrieben, dort auf Deutsch als Interview zum Nachlesen, wenn das einfacher für euch ist. Dir auf jeden Fall vielen lieben Dank fürs Zuhören, fürs Einschalten heute, fürs Dranbleiben. Mach's gut, bis zum nächsten Mal. Ciao.